welcome to the funeral. Marxism is dead. Communism is dead. Socialism is dead. How do I know this? Well, I know it because I read it every day in the newspapers. I hear it every day on the radio. I see it every day on the television. It is taught every day in temples of learning such as this. Yes, and yet, when I hear this affirmation, a name comes into my mind. It is a name which may or may not be familiar to some of you. History students perhaps would know this name. The name is Joseph Goebbels. You heard of Joseph Goebbels? No? Hitler's Minister of Propaganda. A very clever man. A clever bastard, but a clever man nonetheless. And Goebbels knew all about propaganda. He was a genius in the way of propaganda. And he said the following famous words. If you want to tell a lie, please do not tell a small lie. Small lies are of no interest to anybody. If you want to tell a lie, tell a big lie. A great, big, gross, and palpable lie. And repeat it, and repeat it, and repeat it, and repeat it. And if you repeat this gross and palpable lie sufficiently, people will begin to believe it. Oh yes, many people believe these affirmations. But you see, again, another doubt creeps into my mind. I'm rather a skeptical sort of chap. And a doubt comes into my brain, which is as follows. If it is true that Marxism is really dead and that communism is dead, why bother with it? Leave it there, for goodness sake. Jesus Christ said, let the dead bury their dead, leave it alone. You know, I can believe many things about the ruling class, about the rich and wealthy people, the rich and wealthy minority of bankers and capitalists who still run this society. Oh yes, you better believe it. I can believe many things about these people. One thing, however, I do not believe. I do not believe that they are stupid. And I do not believe that the ruling class, the people that run society, would spend so much time and take so much trouble and spend so much money attacking an idea that is dead. Rather, I prefer to believe that the ruling class will only attack an idea which is not only alive, but is dangerous for them and their system. And you better believe it, Marxism is very dangerous for this world in which we live. Now, of course, it may be, that some of you are quite happy with the world in which we live. You know, quite happy about the state of society, about the bankers who ruin the economy of the entire world and walk away with trillions of public money, and then the poor, the unemployed, the sick, the children are presented with the bill. You may be happy with this. It may seem natural to you. You may be happy with the world in which, in the first decade of the 20th century, the year of our Lord 2010, mankind is able to put a man on the moon. They're talking about putting a man on the Mars now, on the planet Mars, and so on. Science and technology has accomplished miracles, and yet in this world, first decade of the 21st century, according to the figures of the United Nations, not my figures, approximately 1.2 billion people are struggling to survive on the level of absolute poverty on $1 per day. Of this 1.2 billion people, 8 million innocent men, women and children will die every year. They're dying now. Because they do not have sufficient means of subsistence to survive. Now, you may be quite happy with it, but incidentally, before we go off that figure, you see, the Holocaust, you all know what the Holocaust was, led to the death of 6 million people in Hitler's concentration camps. Most of them were Jews, not all of them, by the way. Many of them were socialists, communists, trade unionists, gypsies, and so on, homosexual. 6 million people. This is generally considered, the Holocaust is generally considered to be a crime against humanity. And yet, in the year of our Lord, 2010, 8 million men, women, and children are sacrificed every single year to capitalism, because it's a crime of capitalism, and nobody opens their mouth. Nobody is made aware of this silent Holocaust. Okay, as I say, you may be quite happy with this, but in which case, I have nothing further to say to you. You may leave. If, however, like myself, you are not satisfied with this world, that you consider what the things, the type of things which I just described to be colossal and ghastly injustices against the human race, and you wish to do something about it, then you have a responsibility. You have a serious responsibility. The first responsibility you have is to think. Not many people think, particularly not in universities, I think. You know. Trotsky once said, the great Russian revolutionary, the great Marxist Trotsky, when all else fails and there's no other alternative, start to think. It's not a bad thing to do. You must try to understand the world. Understand, why is society as it is? What is wrong? After all, if you go to a doctor with some kind of complaint, you do not expect the doctor to pull out a handkerchief and start to weep. Oh, it's terrible, I'm so sorry. You've got it. As many people say, oh, it's a terrible world, oh, isn't it sad what's happening? No. If you go to a doctor, you require, first of all, a scientific diagnosis of what is wrong with you. Because only when you understand what's the reason for these things can you hope possibly to provide some remedy. It is my submission, you may or may not agree, we'll discuss, that's the purpose of this meeting. It is my submission that Marxism uniquely provides us with, first of all, the necessary analytical tools which permit us to understand what is happening in this world. Many people don't understand. Many people are sorry for it. Many people complain about it. Many people protest about it. Not many people take the trouble to ask the question, what is wrong? What's the fault? What's the problem? It's only Marxism, which is a science, it's a scientific theory, which provides us with such an understanding. Now, I'm well aware, just many will have started term, you'll start, some of you will be studying history or politics or philosophy or economics. And I have no doubt whatsoever that the story that will be put to you is, yes, Marx. Oh, well, that was quite interesting 100 years ago. But this is old stuff. What we need is not old ideas, old-fashioned ideas, but modern, new ideas. Superficially, it's an attractive theory. However, you know, a theory is not necessarily wrong for being old. And a theory is not necessarily good or correct for being new. Let me give you a case in point. The wheel. How old is the wheel? Does anyone know? Anyone? Very old. Okay, fair enough. Old. Very old. It's been going for thousands of years, but still continues to roll. You know, it still works more or less, you know. What would you think of somebody that comes, oh no, the wheel is old-fashioned, that's old-fashioned stuff. Let's try and invent a new wheel. A wheel for the 21st century. What sort of a wheel would that be? A square one? A triangle? I don't know. I do know that any alternative is not going to carry us 1 centimetre further than this old-fashioned thing which we've had for so long. But it's my contention, you see, which I hope to demonstrate tonight, that Marxism, far from being old-fashioned and belonging to the past, is the most modern, the most relevant, the most up-to-date, the most scientific theory which you can possibly adopt. Why do I say this? It's not going to be just making an assertion. I should make some effort to prove it. Well, let's start with a little challenge. Now, in this wonderful temple of learning, I imagine, it's a long time since I was in university, but I imagine that you possess a library. Yeah, and that's a bit old-fashioned, isn't it? Because you use internet instead. Is there a library on the premises? Yes? Yes? No? I didn't hear anything. Yes or no? Yes. Thank you, sir. Is it a good library? You don't know yet. Somebody says yes, it's a good library. Fine. Okay, here's the challenge. The challenge is in two parts. After tonight's meeting, well, it'll have to be tomorrow morning, I imagine they shut the library. Tomorrow morning, go to this library, take out any bourgeois book, any orthodox book about politics, economics, society, and so on, written 150 years ago. And I will tell you in advance, that book will merely have an historical value, an historical interest, nothing else. Application to present reality, zero. Okay? Here's the second half of the challenge. If you read the Communist Manifesto, you have the manifesto at the back, Ben? Good man, otherwise you're going to be shot. There it is. Hold it up for everyone to see. There we are. It's on offer this week, so it's quite cheap. Even a student could buy that. The Manifesto of the Communist Party, written by two youngsters. They were young men, not much older than you. Over 150 years ago, 1848. If you've read it already, read it again. I've read it hundreds of times, and I learn something new every time I open that book. If you haven't read it, you're in for a surprise. And you'll have a surprise. Because here is a book written 150 years, incidentally, this is one of the great books in the whole of human history. One of the few books that has transformed human history. So even if you're not a Marxist, even if you have no intention of being a Marxist, you should at least make the effort to study this book, because it has changed the face of the world. It has changed human history. But let's take the Communist Manifesto, written 150 years ago. Here's a book written 150 years ago which precisely describes the world now, not the world of 150, not in the slightest degree. It describes our world, this world. It doesn't just describe the world as it is now, it explains it in a brilliant scientific fashion. By the way, don't be afraid of this, it's a very simple book to read. Marx and Engels wrote for workers fundamentally. Most of the books are quite easy to read. Capital is a little bit more difficult. The Manifesto is a very simple book. Now, why do I say this? Well, look, let's take a couple of examples. I have no doubt that you've all heard of something called globalization, yes? Yes. Yeah. You could hardly not have heard of it. You all know what globalization is. And globalization is a buzzword which for the last 20 years is presented by a wonderful new idea, an entirely new concept, never been heard of before. Not true. Not so. Globalization was explained by Marx and Engels in the pages of the Communist Manifesto. You can read it for yourself. Where they explain that capitalism is formed, first of all, as a national market. That, by the way, was a big step forward in its day, because prior to that, they were little feudal elements without any connection. It formed as a national market, whether in England, in France, in Germany, and so on. But Marx predicted capitalism will develop the productive forces to such an extent that the national market will be too small, cannot contain the colossal productive power of society, and therefore, in place of the national market, capitalism will produce a world market. Now, when Marx wrote those lines, there was absolutely no empirical evidence for this whatsoever, because there was only one capitalist country in existence, and that was England. France was at its early beginnings, Germany was still in the future. There was no question of a capitalist world market when you wrote those things. And yet, if you take the world of the 21st century, the most important fact of this epoch in which we live is precisely the crushing domination of the world market, globalization, from which no economy, no national economy can now escape. This was explained and predicted in advance, scientifically, by Marx 150 years ago. Let me give you another example. When Marx wrote the Manifesto, there were no big industries anywhere. There were no big factories anywhere. In Britain, the workshops were quite small affairs, in France even smaller. And yet Marx predicted what he referred to as a process of the concentration of capital. That's to say, an enormous accumulation of wealth and power and riches at one end of society, and a concentration of industry and wealth at one end of society, and at the other end a growing poverty, immiseration, and so on, of the mass of working people. Now if you look at present day society, in my opinion, this has been entirely borne out. Although, for decades, I remember when I was young and handsome and slim, like you said, don't laugh, it's true, about 100 years ago, when I was in university, even when I was at school, I remember, no, it's all nonsense, Marx, what he put, there's no concentration of capital, it's all wrong. In the last 20 years, the economists even put forward a formula. You may have heard of this. Small is beautiful. You heard of that? Small is beautiful. Well, I don't know. My wife is small, but she's also beautiful. But that's nothing to do with it. It's not an aesthetic question. What they meant to say is that the future of capitalism will be small factories, small businesses with the entrepreneur, the courage of the spirit, taking risks and all the rest of the stuff. The market economy. Okay. What's the truth? What's the facts? This so-called market economy, which operates on the basis of the law of the jungle, just collapsed approximately 3 years ago in the biggest crisis, certainly since the 1930s. They admit this themselves. By the way, you read the economists for the last 20 years, they were insistent that no such crisis would ever happen again. You read people, even Gordon Brown said that. You heard of Gordon Brown? Yes. No, he's a forgotten man now. But anyway, Gordon, yes, he said this. Yeah, he was so fool. The man was so foolish as to make this. He said, the boom bust cycle is finished. You remember that winged phrase? The Tories now reminding you of that. Yes, but they all sang the same song. They all thought the same thing. Marx is out of date. Marx is old fashioned. Marx predicted the crisis. Where's the crisis? Where's the crisis? Here's the crisis. The biggest crisis for the last 60 years, according to their own statements, in my opinion. Perhaps the biggest, the most profoundest crisis in the history of capitalism. Quite likely, you could argue that. The system's broken down. Oh, by the way, what happened to market economics? What happened to the law of the fittest? And the entrepreneurial spirit and the courage and the risk-taking and so on? What happened to it? They made huge, vast, the bankers in particular, made huge, vast, obscene profits. For the last 20 or 30 years, the moment they hit trouble and the whole thing collapsed, it was bound to collapse, it did collapse. What do they do? What do they say? Oh, no, the state mustn't interfere. Private enterprise, the state, the market, state mustn't, government mustn't, there must be no regulations. There were regulations to control the banks 20 years ago. They made a bonfire under Thatcher. They made a bonfire of these regulations. No. Entrepreneurial spirit, market economics. Bound to succeed. Government mustn't interfere. Okay. The moment that these gangsters collapsed, what did they do? Immediately go running to the government of the United States, the United Kingdom, France. Oh, give us money. We're broke. Give us money. Incidentally, you know what happens with poor students? You've all taken out a loan, I assume. You know, if you get into debt, which probably some of you will, you run up a debt. Can you go to the bank, to the government, or the bank and say, oh, no, look, I've got a debt, give me money. I need money, give me money. Can you do that? What do you think would happen? You certainly wouldn't get any money. You'd get the grand order of the boot. But these big guys, the bankers, go running to the government, and the government comes with an open checkbook. Here, take $1 trillion, $2 trillion, take what you want. To fill the gaps caused by their speculation, the criminal speculation. And then the next day they say, oh, look, we got a deficit. The state, because the state hasn't got any money, you see. We got a deficit. We've got to solve this. We've got to cut. Cut unnecessary things. Bankers are not unnecessary, of course. No, we've got to cut universities, cut state teachers, cut health service, cut child benefit, cut pensions. So on. Now, can you make any sense of this economics? Can you understand the logic of that? As I can. Now, and the big question is this. What happened to the market spirit? What happened to the entrepreneurs? What happened to the... Where's the risk? There is no risk, for God's sake. If a group of bankers can run up billions and trillions of pounds worth, and then go to the taxpayer and demand the money with menaces, which, by the way, is a criminal offence. There is nothing left of this nonsense. Not one stone upon another is left of the market economy, capitalism, and all. It's shown to be a fake, false argument from start to finish. But to go back to the concentration of capital, which wasn't supposed to exist, which is predicted in the pages of the manifesto, what are the facts? I'll tell you the facts. The whole of this vast world economy, which controls your lives, you think I'm talking about abstract things here? Theories which have got no bearing on human existence and youth, you're very much mistaken. This vast mechanism, the world economy, dictates your future, dictates the entire future of the whole priorities of the human race are dictated by this, by the law of the jungle. Okay, who controls this world economy? Well, I'll tell you. Approximately 200 gigantic transnational companies control the entire economy of the world. Okay? The big majority of them are based in the United States. Not all of them. Some are Japanese, some are even British, some are French, some are German, some are even Chinese now. 200 gigantic companies that control the destinies of the human race. Fact. Okay. Now, if this isn't the concentration of capital, I don't know what is. I already described the other end of the scale. 1.2 billion people living in conditions of absolute poverty, of which 8 million die every year because they haven't got enough money to live on. Now, I'm not making out a moral case here. I'm not much interested in morality. I am not saying that this system is good, bad, or indifferent. What I am saying is it does not work. That's what I'm saying. And I'm also saying that the analysis, if you want to understand the reasons why it breaks down, you'd have to go back and read the works of Marx. Now, let's deal with the question, because the subject of the discussion also is, what is Marxism? Well, that's a big subject, which I will not have time to deal with tonight. Perhaps we can have future discussions and discuss point by point what Marxism is. But first of all, let me dispel a few misconceptions. There are many misconceptions, which, by the way, are malicious falsehoods which are put into circulation by interested parties. First mistake. Oh, Marxism. Didn't Marx and Engels say that you could reduce everything to economics? It's all a question of the productive forces. You know. What absolute balderdash. What absolute nonsense. How is it possible to reduce everything to economics? It's foolishness. Marx and Engels didn't just deal with economics, they dealt with history, politics, philosophy. They started off as philosophers, as I will explain in one moment. No. Marx never said any such thing. You could reduce everything to economics. What they did say, and it is absolutely true, and I will repeat it now, choose my words very carefully. In the last analysis, I repeat, in the last analysis, the viability of any socio-economic system, including capitalism, is determined by its ability to develop the means of production. Yes, 1,000% correct. And can anyone deny this? Because in the last analysis, the success, the viability of any human society must be determined by its ability to provide the needs of life for people, for all people. In other words, before one can think beautiful thoughts, as you've all come here to Yulu, no doubt you've come here deliberately to think beautiful thoughts, and good luck to you. But the question is, before you can think beautiful thoughts about religion or politics or philosophy or art or anything else, first of all, you have to eat. Or no, even students have to eat occasionally. Yeah? You have to eat. You have to have clothes on your back. You have to have a roof over your head. Or not. Oh, yes. Even Stephen Hawking or... what's the other chap? So-called artist? Damien Hirst and so on. They have to eat. They have to have clothes on their back. And they have to have... they have a very nice house, actually. That's another discussion. And therefore, a society must provide these things first before anything else can be created. That's a fact. And it's a condemnation of this particular system that it is not capable of guaranteeing these things for the people of this planet at the present time. That's the condemnation. Anyway, to go back, Marxism actually started out not as economics at all. Marxism was born as a philosophy. It's a philosophy. It remains a philosophy, as a matter of fact. Marx and Engels began when they were young students like yourselves, students of philosophy, particularly a student of the great philosopher. Marvelous, rather difficult to read, but tremendously profound philosopher called Hegel. Hegel was an idealist. Marx and Engels were philosophical materialists. That's another matter. But Hegel had an idea of a brilliant idea, a very profound idea, a very beautiful idea, which is called dialectics. Many people are frightened by this. Marxist philosophy is called dialectical materialism. Many people are put off. They think, oh, this is very difficult. It's not difficult at all, as a matter of fact. And it's in two parts. So let's deal with dialectics first. Dialectics, by the way, was not invented by Marx, was not invented by Hegel either. It's a very old idea. It was right back. The first European philosopher to deal with this was, in my opinion, a marvelous old philosopher called Heraclitus. One of the great Greek philosophers, whose collected works are about 10 pages, I think, that's all that's left. But they're very profound aphorisms. I won't go into that now. But the idea of dialectics, which has surfaced continuously over thousands of years, you could even argue, it's possible to argue, you could find elements of dialectics even in things like Buddhism and Hinduism, it is possible to argue. Which reflects a profound reality about nature, which is the following. Everything moves. Everything constantly changes. It's a dynamic philosophy. That's what makes it so exciting and so modern. Heraclitus summed it up in one of his marvelous aphorisms. He said, everything changes. Nothing remains the same. He said, it is impossible. He said, no man can step in the same stream twice because it's gone. In other words, it's a conception of the whole universe, not as something static and fixed, but something that's constantly flowing, constantly moving, but it's not only that. In this day and age, most people, I think, most educated people at least, accept the idea, for example, of evolution. Before Darwin, marvelous, profound contemporary of Marx, Marx thought very highly of Darwin. He was going to dedicate Capital to Darwin. He sent the dedication, but Darwin, I think, politely refused because he had enough trouble on his plate with the church and so on, so he thought it wasn't very wise. But before Darwin, people actually thought that the human species and all animal species were all separate, all fixed, never changed. Okay? They were all created by God. They all went into Noah's Ark, you know. The animals went two by two. That God created the world in how long? How many days? Six, that's a clever person. Most people would say seven. Six, yes. And on the seventh day he rested. See, God was a good friend. He wouldn't work on a Sunday. On the seventh day he rested. That he created everything and it is all fixed since that time. There are people who still believe this. In America, and so there's people that are trying to force the American schools to teach creationism alongside Darwinism. They dare not cancel out Darwinism anymore. Darwin's great contribution has shown that, on the contrary, species change. Species have evolved over a long period of time, and we ourselves have evolved from lower animals. By the way, I don't know if you know this, long before Darwin, a Greek philosopher, materialist, discovered this also, Anaxagoras, said that man had developed from a fish, and he proved it by comparing human embryos, which go through all the stages, and fossils. Remarkable. It's thousands of years ago. Everything changes. Now that's a very profound idea because most people can't get their heads around this. The idea of constant change. They can't accept it. And history changes. For example, capitalism. I mean, I'm sure that if, as I hope, at the end of this discussion, you'll all become convinced Marxists, absolutely and raring to go to fight for socialism. If that's the case, I shall be very delighted. But if you go home and discuss this with your parents, I'm fairly sure what the reaction of some of them will be. And what they will say to you is, don't go down that road. No. Listen, I used to think like that when I was your age. You know this one? I used to think like that when I was your age. But as I got older, I realized it's utopian, it's not possible because of human... Oh, but by the way, do not believe that people get older and wiser. Don't you believe it. Most people get older and more stupid. That's a separate item. Don't let them pull that one. Oh, I realize that it's not possible because of human nature. You can't change human nature. You heard that? You cannot change human nature. People are naturally greedy and so... Let me tell you something. So-called human nature has changed many times in the course of history. Many times. And ideas and customs of which we today find absolutely abhorrent, at one time were considered quite normal. Example, slavery. Which seems pretty abhorrent to us, but at the time of Aristotle was a genius because he posed the question, is slavery moral? That was what he was said. Nobody else asked him. And even he had to answer, no, it is moral because the slaves are not proper human beings. They haven't got souls. Women also, by the way. Women and slaves were less than human because they lacked souls. This idea was generally accepted at the time. Let me give you a case in point. I don't know whether this dates me. There is a film, or there was a film, called The Flintstones. You heard of this film? Yeah, you have. Great, fantastic. I thought that maybe you wouldn't have heard of it. You know what it's about. Fred and Wilma Flintstone, you know. Here is a society about a million years ago. There's dinosaurs a long time, alongside human beings, by the way. And it's very interesting, because 1 million years ago, here's a society where there's money, and banks, and bankers, and private property, and police, and prisons, and armies, and the bourgeois family, in which the man is oppressed by the woman. In other words, just like today. Now, before you say anything, I do actually possess a sense of humour, and I am aware that it's meant to be funny. I'm aware of this fact. Even Marxists do have a sense of humour. Yes, but people believe this. People actually, they think, oh no, it's always been like this. We've always had rich and poor. They believe it. They believe it. It's not an idea, it's a prejudice. And it is false. It's completely false. As a matter of fact, the society in which we live, capitalism, has only existed for approximately 200 years. Okay? How long do you think the human species has been around? By human, I mean Homo sapiens sapiens, which is the species which most of us tend to belong to. Although somebody's got my doubts. How long have we been around? Anyone know? How long? Oh, more than that. More than that. Much more than that. Good guess, anyway. Anyone else? Well, you could, it depends on this difference. You could, at most, 100,000 years, you could say. 100,000 years would be more or less around. Capitalism, class society, that the division of society between rich and poor, private ownership and so on and so forth, has only existed for how long, do you think? Class society. So-called civilization is known as. How long?
4,000 years.
More than that, you're very conservative. You 10,000 years. Go back to the Middle East, some companies here from Iraq. But in Jordan, they found human settlement, and in Turkey, going back 10,000 years ago. That's when it started, the division of society between rich and poor, private property, the state. Bless you. Before that, what was there? I'll tell you. Before that, there was a society in which money, private property, and the state were completely unknown. Primitive tribal communism. The remnants of that still exist. There's a few of them left now, but in the Amazon jungle and so on, there's still a few odd tribes that they haven't yet succeeded in civilizing. They get along quite well without money, without private property, without banks, without bankers, without Gordon Brown, without David Cameron. And quite happy under these circumstances. Communism, there was no private property. No private property. And people regarded that as quite natural until what is known as the Neolithic Revolution 10,000 years ago. It's a separate thing. But what I'm saying to you is this. The idea that human society does not change is false. It's so false, it's ridiculous, it's laughable. Okay? There have been several, broadly speaking, several great social transformations. The first was slave society, which lasted quite some time. That then collapsed. Then you had feudal society, which rose and also went into decline. And finally, for the last 200 years, we've had this wonderful capitalist system, okay, which is supposed to be the natural state of man, which is false. Comically, ridiculously, absurdly false. No such thing. Capitalist system is very recent, with all its morality and its religion and its concepts and its structures. That's only existed for 200 years, which means if you can examine, imagine a clock of 24 hours representing the last 100,000 years that we've been on this planet, then class society would only have existed for approximately the last 5 minutes or less, and capitalism would only have existed for about 1 minute or 10 seconds, whatever, a very short space of time. Okay. Therefore, what you have to understand is that the different forms of society come, the same as you and I, are born, they come into existence, they expand for a while to the degree that they're able to develop the productive forces. They will expand and develop. Then they reach a critical point in which that's no longer possible. They enter into a phase of decline, senility, and eventually they collapse, giving rise to a new social formation. I repeat, this has happened several times, and each time, by the way, it's accompanied by a religious revolution, an artistic revolution, and a moral revolution. We change. People change. And it's my contention that the capitalist system, which, by the way, originally did play a very progressive role, a very revolutionary role. I mean, if one looks at human progress in terms of technology, science, and so on, there's no comparison. The progress that's been made over the last 200 years puts in the same all of the previous development for the last 10,000 years of so-called civilization. Yes, but it's my contention that this now has reached a limit in which this system no longer functions, no longer is capable of satisfying human needs, and the continuation of this system puts a question mark not just on the future of human civilization and civilized values. It puts a question mark even on the continuation of the human race, if we permit the whole world economy, the whole planet, all the major decisions to be taken purely on the basis of private greed of a handful of individuals. I'm not referring to a moral condemnation. You think what you like about it. What I am saying is this. Certain things flow from that. The destruction of the tropical forests, the destruction of the ozone layer, the poisoning of the food that we eat, the water that we drink, all for the sake of profit, because this system is not based upon the production of the human needs. If it was a question of a rational economy in which science, industry, technique, agriculture were placed at the disposal of the human race, we'd solve all the problems very quickly. You better believe it. But it's not for that. It isn't for that. It's purely on the basis of profit, as can be easily detected. And this has terrible consequences for the future of humanity. Historically, the application of dialectical materialism to society is known as historical materialism. I've dealt with that briefly in what I've just said. You can see how society develops, you can see the contradictions within society, and you can also, any student of history can see that societies precisely come into existence, develop, enter into crisis, and then enter in decline. You don't think that this system is in a phase of decline? Well, just have a look at your television sets and compare what you see with, for example, the 300 years decline of the Roman Empire. The striking comparisons, very striking, which I can elaborate on that if you wish. Economics, the economic theories of Marx have been borne out. Incidentally, Capital, which is Karl Marx's great economic masterpiece, which for years and years was shunted to one side, is now a bestseller in Germany specifically since the crisis of capitalism. Why is it a bestseller? Because all of the theories of the orthodox economists have failed miserably. I didn't bring them tonight. I could bring a few quotes from prominent orthodox economists who admit. One of them recently made the following statement in The Economist. He said, well, if you look at the last 30 years, and 30 years is a fairly long time, the orthodox theories of macroeconomics have at best been useless and at worst been positively harmful. This is one of the major economists passing a death sentence on orthodox economics. And therefore people look towards Marxist economics because they do precisely explain, we can discuss this in the next session if you wish, precisely explain the reason for the present crisis, which is actually a crisis of overproduction. I won't develop that point, we can discuss it later on. But we better come to the point. Where is this leading to? Well, you see, if, by the way, I've spoken, you probably really have spoken in meetings of this sort at different times, in different places, in different countries, and there's always one chap present who will say something of the following, on the following lines. Well, Alan, it's very interesting what you just said, and well, I made some good points and so on, but I'm not really interested in politics. I just want to live my life, enjoy myself, and so on. My answer to that person, before they put their hand up to speak, is as follows. Well, my friend, it may well be that you're not interested in politics, but politics is very interested in you. You think you can escape from politics? You think you can escape from this general crisis? You just try it, my friend. You just try it. Go to your house, lock the door, close the windows, hide under the bed. You will not escape. One of these days, politics will come to your house and knock on the door, usually at a rather inconvenient hour. No, no, this discussion is about you. It is about you. It's about your future. For example, whether or not when you leave this place with a first-class degree under your arm, as I'm sure will be the case, will you get a job? Will your services be required? You know what you are? Shall I tell you? The best qualified unemployed people in the history of Britain. You know, many graduates are unemployed, or they have to take other jobs on buses or in Tesco's or whatever. You know, and yet, society needs these people. We need you. Society needs doctors, teachers, engineers, even philosophers and artists and writers and so on. Society needs your talent to make it a richer and a better and a more humane place. Yes, but this society is not determined by what society needs. That's the whole point I'm getting at. That's the whole point of it. The whole point I'm getting at is capitalism is a society based on production for profit, whereas socialism is a society based on production for the satisfaction of human needs, and the two are in complete contradiction. Now, of course, you could do as my good friend, as I just said, well, you could just go home and try to forget about it and put your head under the blanket and turn off or get blotto. In my day, it used to be vodka, now it's something else, but whatever. Escapism. Try to escape, but there is no escape. There is no escape. There is no escape for the whole of the human race, which is racked now by wars, by this is also a product of the crisis of capitalism. Does anyone in this room honestly think that the Iraq war was on the basis that they wanted to restore democracy in Iraq? You've got to be joking. You have got to be joking. It's a product of capitalism. It's greed for oil, for profits, although it's meant tens of thousands of communist firms from Iraq and give an eyewitness account of that. Terrible horrors exist. Yeah, but these horrors are the product of a particular type of society which frankly does not deserve to exist. And therefore what I'd say to you is this. You have no alternative but to fight. If you don't fight, if you don't get organized, if you don't mobilize all the youth and workers and so on to fight for a better type of society, then you're going to get battered. You're going to get crushed, and you will have deserved it. You will have deserved it. The only way forward, if you're not satisfied with the society, is to fight. Yeah, but even that's not enough. You know, if you want to fight successfully, the first prerequisite is you have to understand the nature of the problem. Otherwise, it's hopeless putting forward a solution unless you've understood the nature of the problem. I will just finish on this note. Am I pessimistic? Well, not in the slightest. Not in the slightest. All Marxists are always optimistic. Eternally optimistic. What I wouldn't like is this. I mean, you can think what you like about what I've just said. You can agree, I hope that you will, or you can disagree strongly. That's fine. We're here to discuss. No problem at all. please say what you think. But at the end of this meeting, do not leave this room. If you do this, then I will have failed in my objective. Do not leave this room thinking, well, I can make no difference. Please don't think that. No. I'm here to tell you, no matter what you do, I'm here to tell you, you can make a difference. We can make a difference, to be more accurate. Of course, you as an isolated individual can do nothing. What are you going to do as one person? Then you really would be impotent. But you see, you can see by the presence in this room, we're not alone. There is interest in the ideas of socialism, of Marxism, of communism, of revolution, and so on. Many people are thinking about this now because they see simply that this society doesn't work. Our comrades in the United States, I represent an organization called the International Marxist Tendency. We have sections and groups in many countries. When Baring's Bank collapsed, was it 18 months ago? Something like that. The American comrades went along selling the paper. They got a paper, the same name as this, Socialist Appeal. Should buy one afterwards. And on the front page it said, capitalism has failed. And they went along to Wall Street, of all places, and they were selling this, the place where all the big bankers hang out and so on. And people were buying the paper. I thought it was quite a bold initiative. And one guy came up with a posh suit and a tie and so on, bought the paper, looked at the front page. Capitalism has failed. He said, yes, ain't that the truth? And it came straight from his heart, probably lost his job. What I'm saying to you is this. What's the purpose of this discussion? The purpose is, first of all, to highlight that society is in a deep crisis. Anyone can see this. You don't have to be clever to see this. You just put on your television set. B, something must be done about this. C, in order to do something, you have to understand it. And D, the only way really to get a scientific understanding of this is Marxism, which I hope that you'll at least, if I haven't convinced you this evening, at least take it in. Just take the trouble to read Marxism, Marx, Engels, Lenin, Trotsky. You'll find it a very rewarding, very interesting experience as a minimum. And finally, it's not enough to read books and to understand the ideas. We've got to get organized. Get organized. Organize on the campus, organize among the students, organize in the factories, organize in the trade union branches, organize in Britain and internationally to fight for the only cause that's worth fighting for in the first decade of the 20th century, the worldwide struggle for socialism and the emancipation of the working class. Thank you.